Hi, I'm Danny.
And I'm Gabby.
And this is Clashes, a podcast exploring culture shock in all its chaotic forms.
We know a good shock can shake things up.
So we blew up our lives and crash-landed in Paris.
With a delusional sense of hope.
And a dangerous bread habit.
I feel attacked. But culture shock isn't just about changing countries.
Almost. It's about embracing the unknown.
From navigating friendships in your 30s.
Awkward. To processing pop culture's oddest obsessions.
So buckle up and embrace the chaos.
One clash at a time.
Hello.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to the pod.
I think we don't know what episode it is anymore. Nine?
Yeah, we've gotten the episodes confused.
What you're counting.
If anyone dares mention.
Eight or
don't
nine.
Don't offend us. We know
one
what we're doing.
Two. Yeah.
Well, Danny, I saw on your Instagram you went somewhere cool this week.
Yeah, I went to a really cool restaurant, of course, in the 9th. Oh, sorry, in the 11th. Everything cool. Yeah.
You know what? The last few times you've said, of course, in the 9th. So
I know.
I think the 9th and the 11th are the hubs of culture.
I would say the 11th is like where all the cool places are. And the 9th.
Because it's cheaper to open property.
I don't know what it is, but it's like all the hipsters are going there. Anyway.
What is a hipster in 2025?
I don't know. Gen Z?
Gen Z is hipster?
I don't know. I don't know what the cool term is, but all the cool restaurants in Paris are opening in the 11th, I feel.
Okay.
I don't know how new it is, but it's a restaurant called JIP.
I haven't seen it on my Instagram a lot.
It's really good, and it was really cheap. It was for dinner, €35.
Can you imagine? Dinner, €35. Can you imagine that in New York?
No.
That is one cocktail.
Can you imagine? That's like...
That's literally like one drink.
A side of fries.
Yes. That's just saying... And how many courses?
It was three courses.
So that's insanity.
And it was really good. It's like... I don't know if it's like Japanese, but Japanese influences for sure. It was really good. And the only thing I will say is two things. Make a reservation because it's tiny. I think it only has like 20 seats. I don't recommend you go there if you're a big group because it's very small. So I would say like 2-3 people max, 4 absolute max. A lot of the seating is countertop. So if you don't like that, that's not your place.
Yeah.
And it was, if you're very picky with like the things you eat, maybe it's not the place for you because there's not that many options. There's just like basically two options per course.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
But there are a lot of veggie options. So if you're a vegetarian, you should be fine.
Cool.
Yeah,
oh, that's good.
Very good and very cheap.
I really want to go. I think I told you, but I saw their shrimp toast.
It's really good. Paul got that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was really good. And then basically the first course was sashimi or tofu. We got both, really good. The second course was the shrimp toast, or what did I get? It was kind of like almost like a, not a ravioli, like a tortellini, but like stuffed with like sweet potato. It was really good.
Cool.
And then the main course was noodles two different ways. So really good.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. I want to go.
Highly recommend.
Yeah. I feel like I haven't really eaten anywhere like that cool lately. Honestly, like that bowl I had this morning was really good.
At Echo. Yeah. I love Echo.
If you want like a giant portion size with actually spicy food, I really thought it was so good.
That was my hangover food for a long time.
Oh my God. Yeah. It was like a really well-cooked egg. Like not really, it was like a mix of scrambled and omelet. It was cool, really soft. And then this amazing chorizo.
And like the crispy rice.
Oh my God, the crispy rice. Good. And then they had really cool, it was like they had a pickled vegetable. They had avocado, which really balanced off the spice of it all.
Yeah.
Huge portion, so much so my friend and I meant to order one for each. The waitress misunderstood us and ended up just splitting it because it was like...
It's really good. I used to order that all the time on Deliveroo for when I was super hungover. And then I actually went to Echo one time, like in person. I was like, oh, the place is so cute.
You can get Deliveroo.
Yeah. So it changed. That was like my go-to
hangover. Wait, that's going to change my life. If they deliver to my neighborhood, that's going to change my life.
I think they probably do. Because they're far from me.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You're right.
Look it up. Okay, a quick update from our last episode, which was a friendship breakup one. We got so many messages around that episode before and after, but mainly because I asked, have you ever been through a breakup with a friend? And we got a lot of submissions from people telling their own stories. And there's so many good ones that I think we're going to do a mini episode where we're going to like read them and maybe like not give our opinion, but kind of say if you
maybe
were to
we do like
what
would
do?
What like a version of us would have done and then what our therapist our therapized version
what
would
could
do?
You learn from this I think it's interesting again like you said I think it takes the shame like talking about these things it takes like the shame
away I literally had multiple people message me and be like I actually am not ready to listen to this episode because I have so much shame and it's so triggering and honestly when I was talking about my issue I felt the same way
yeah
like I felt cathartic but then at the same time like Oh God, you're, I can't, like, believe that happened to me. Yeah, I'm really self-conscious around it. So many, that episode got such an interesting reaction.
I was kind of not shocked, but also kind of shocked when I posted on Instagram, like, tell us your stories. I thought we're going to, like, two or three. And like, I thought dozens. It was going to be like, oh, my friend stopped talking to me and that's it. No, people, like, sent paragraphs and, like, crazy stories of, like, really fucked up situations.
I can't tell if that makes me sad or if it makes me feel less alone or both.
I think a mix.
Yeah.
It's and like then also, like, someone, I'm not going to say her name because I don't know if she wants this, but she, like, messaged us and said, I'm still talking about mine in therapy because,
oh God, like, can't even cope with it yet. Yeah.
It was.
So. It's so wild. I think I feel really proud of us that we hit on a subject that had a lot of really strong reactions.
I think the craziest thing about it is, like, no one talks about it, but everybody has gone through
it. Well, isn't that weird? So that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Because part of the reason we wanted to do it, because I brought it up at a brunch like the day or before or so, and everyone reacted. But then I'm like, why have I never actually had these conversations with my friends before? Because I haven't had those conversations with
you're
most
right.
of my friends
it's
before.
Not a thing you
no.
talk about.
Because I actually think it's one of those things where you're embarrassed to tell your new friends
that someone
why like an old. Yes. Because I think it feels like they're like, oh, well, what should I look out for?
You.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And if you did it to another friend, I also think that you don't want to share that you also treated someone that way.
Well, it's,
you
know, also painful. A lot of people are still, like, hurt by
it. With
it.
Yeah.
And so I think people don't like to talk about these things because they're like, I'm so hurt by this incident. So they don't bring it up. It's not something people want to talk about. Unless maybe you have, like, that friend in common and you're like, oh, she doesn't talk to me anymore.
Right. And it's more of, like, catharsis.
But yeah, I think it was really interesting to see all the stories. So I think we said we're going to do a bonus ep, just going through all the stories and maybe talking about, like, what we would have done in their place. A lot of them are, like, the common theme I would say with the submissions we got were, like, one friend really fucked up.
Oh, so interesting.
Yeah.
Maybe that's only because we only ever heard one side of the story.
true. But one of them was, like, the boyfriend cheated on the girl with the best friend. So I was like, oh, fuck.
Oh my God.
That sucks. So we'll talk about it.
That's like
we'll
a friendship massacre.
Yeah. It's just really crazy. But you're not alone, basically.
Yeah, you're not alone, guys. Cool. Well, today we are talking about another kind of existential emotional topic. I'm making Danny hit love on the one episode. You're like, yeah, I don't talk about my emotions. And then I come in every episode and I'm like, all right, we're going to deep dive into our deepest traumas.
No, this is a great one. And it kind of really goes well with moving to Paris.
Yes.
Just moving in general.
We've been trying to really think about the notion of culture clash and how it actually infiltrates so many other areas of our lives. And so we're going to be talking about personality and can personalities change throughout our life, specifically when you move from culture to culture?
Yeah. Or how does culture affect your personality?
Yeah. And I mean, we were talking kind of like both a kind of surface level personality and also really deep core personality traits, which is interesting. But to kick it off, there's a couple of cool articles that Danny and I were sending back and forth. Of course, there's always an article that I love to link to. But we were reading through this one in the New Yorker. It's interesting because I think in 2022, there was a whole wave of articles about personality. I noticed this. And I have a theory that, and actually one of the articles kind of mentions this, but it was like around COVID that a lot of people were really confused why they changed after COVID. People were coming back to life. Like, and I think, I mean, do you remember? Like, I felt quite socially awkward after.
Yes, but also, I think, and we'll get into this, but I think your work life affects the way
you
act.
That's such a good point, too. Yeah.
And so you're not going to an office anymore.
Right.
And you're not interactive with, like, higher-ups or managers.
Ask yourself, like, who am I?
I remember seeing a really funny meme or tweet back in the day during confinement saying, like, you know how we all became like slobs during confinement because we're like home, working from home. It's like, turns out I was actually really dressing for other people, not for myself. And I was like, very true.
God, that is true. Yeah, that's interesting. So about this article, it's called Becoming You and it's in the New Yorker. And it was in 2022, like a lot of the articles we'll talk about. And it just really dissects, can your personality change?
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay. So I guess I would have thought actually it can change almost even more than it can.
Okay.
So essentially what I learned from this article is that most people until the 1950s thought that your personality was just fully fixed.
So fast. So people thought back in the day that the way you were was just the way you were and that never changed.
Isn't that so interesting?
That's really
weird. It's so counter to modern self-help
yeah,
the premise for all these books and
yeah,
podcasts.
Now we're like, you can change if you anything. Believe in yourself.
Yes. And so what the data at the end of it kind of comes to maybe 30 to 50%. No one knows this, of course.
Right.
But like it's maybe genetic or kind of fixed, mm-hmm. but there's a lot of room to play.
Yeah.
So imagine you have like 50 to 70% of your personality to play with.
That could always be changed or affected by your surroundings or the people that you associate with or... even your hobbies or who you date. Like there's just so many things that can affect it.
I mean, not even to mention, and we're going to get into this, but therapy, things that you willingly look at and then interrogate.
Going
and
through
say,
like trauma.
Yeah, yeah, so much. So we thought it could be interesting to start with, okay, well, what is personality? Like, what does that even mean? You know?
Yes.
And so personality, technically, what they talk about is 5 different things. So we're going to go through them. And then I want to ask Dani where she is on this like spectrum. I think we'll do 0 to 100 maybe.
Sure.
Cause I saw
100 being like,
yeah, like you're most. Like very that.
Okay.
That was my scientific way of explaining that. Okay. So the first one is extroversion. That's like the first, that's like a, one of the first tenets of personality. Like where are you on 0 to 100?
I think it's a, I don't know. I like to think I'm an extrovert, but I think I'm like a introverted extrovert.
What does that mean? I'm always confused by that.
Like some, I love being social, meeting people, talking to people.
Okay.
But I need to charge my battery every once in a while and be alone and not talk to anyone. Right. So I think I'm like 50.
Oh, wow. 65. Like fully split. Okay. 65 extrovert.
I think I'm more extrovert than introvert, but sometimes I'm like, don't talk to me.
Right.
Okay. I need to be alone. How about you?
You know what I've realized throughout life? So I took the ENFP thing, which apparently what I learned from my quote unquote research is bullshit. It's like apparently no one is actually
which one
any
is that
of the letters.
One again?
That's like, is it Myers Briggs?
Oh, I think I took this one.
So like
I forgot what
extrovert
it was.
EN.
Yeah.
I forgot what all of them. Feeling
remember
is where one.
Everybody would put that
one.
On like their dating profiles.
Oh, I mean, I'm still out there, girl, and people are still putting on their dating profile. I actually think Bumble or Hinge or one of them has it as a. Like an option
oh, really?
You choose.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
I always know when I see INTJ, it's not my type of person. Like I just know like you're 100% my opposite. Of course, probably every guy I've dated has been INTJ. But what I've been realizing in my adulthood, specifically my 30s, is I used to think that I was extrovert.
Okay.
Then I thought I was introvert because I had a lot of shitty people in my life.
Okay.
And they weren't energizing me. And now I've realized it depends so much on the people.
Of course.
Like when I have good people in my life, I'm a golden retriever. Like I am just like, I'm out there like pawing, slurping.
You're
I'm
like, please pet me.
Yes. But that's only good people. And then when it's people who drain me,
I
become immediately like could just stay in all day.
I agree. I think there's like a time and place. If there's a good conversation flowing and like you're surrounded by people who are asking questions, I think
that's
good. But if you're like, I find myself a lot, and this is why I think I'm an extrovert, is I find myself a lot when I'm with introverts, I feel like I'm interviewing them.
Oh, I've watched you do this actually.
Yes.
You're really, you know what's funny? You're really good about this. You're really like, because I feel like with me, maybe we just like chat so much that it doesn't feel like you're interviewing
me. No, I think you're like a good conversational
but
person.
I watch you the other day Dani and I were maybe I shouldn't say this but whatever I'll have you to say we were at this like bar
bleep it
we were at this bar and there was like a very sweet but very socially awkward guy and I just gave up. I'm kind of at the stage of my life where I think that if you cannot learn how to be an adult and have a conversation. Now, granted, I'm not being empathetic. He didn't speak English fluently.
Yes.
It's second language.
Oh, yes.
But
I remember who this
you
was.
Were so good and generous. Dani turned to him and just started full on being like a full on interview.
I
just like ignored him and I was like, I just hope he goes.
I know.
Away.
Well, I felt bad because at the beginning, we're like in a circle of people in a group and like no one was talking to him.
It was so
even
weird.
His friends.
I know.
I was like, hello.
Well, that's what I said too. I'm like, could the people who brought him here step up? Like, what are you doing?
I felt so bad. So then I was like, so then I realized he worked in the spirits industry. So I was like, okay, we have something in common. So I was just asking him questions about like what he was doing, the brand he was working for and like all this stuff. So, but then, but even me at one point, I was like, I'm running out of things to say.
You're like, bro, I hit a wall.
Yeah. At one point, I was like, where's the bathroom again? Oh yeah. And I felt bad because his friends just left them there. And I'm like, hello?
Yeah, I felt bad about that too. But anyway, I was really impressed by you in that situation. Okay, so you're 50 to 65
like
on extroversion.
I lean more on the extrovert side, but it depends on who I am and who I'm with.
Right, so maybe not so much with that guy, or at least. Okay, the second one is conscientiousness, which I feel like the description of it is not exactly what I would think it would be. It says how self-disciplined and organized you are.
Okay.
How do you react to that? I'm actually not even sure.
This one's difficult because I think I'm actually self-disciplined, but I'm not super organized with some things I am.
How can you say that? You send me like a script for every episode.
Yeah, but I'm not organized with I'm organized with the things that I need to do and that I want to do, but like chores or things that I don't want to do.
You got a husband who does it for you.
Yeah.
That's Danny's true. Living the dream.
He literally is like, if I didn't clean, you would never clean. I'm like, yeah, well, if you weren't here, I would have to clean. But yeah, I think I'm a little, not 50-50, but I think if I'm interested in whatever it is that I'm doing, I'm very self-disciplined and very organized. If it's something that I'm like, I don't know what this, I'll procrastinate and like not do it until the last possible moment. So maybe 50-50 here too.
Wow.
I don't know. It's difficult to...
This one's hard.
How about you?
I don't know. This one's hard. It's funny because the last one, like the last one on the scale is, well, I'm just spoiling it, but neuroticism. And I feel like that confused with that and conscientiousness. So I'm thinking of an example. You know how I used to have this obsession with everyone being late?
Yeah.
Danny's like, yeah, you're a psychopath. So I used to go crazy because people were late. But I feel like I am very self-disciplined with arrival times.
Yeah.
I texted Danny today, can I arrive 10 minutes early? I'm like, out of control.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm eating ice cream on my couch, of course. I literally was eating ice cream when you texted me. Like...
But you know what's so crazy about me is I didn't want to intrude on you. So I was sitting on a bench in the rain.
Respectful thing.
I was like sitting on a bench in the rain playing Wordle for 30 minutes. I was like, just I'm going to wait.
Me.
And then it starts like downpouring.
Oh my God. No, you should have. I was actually going to text you if you want to come early. I'm not doing anything.
So stupid. Anyway, but I feel like in that sense, I'm pretty conscientious in terms of self-discipline. Like I think I really have a lot of feelings around respecting other people's time.
Yeah.
Because I think that time and energy are very precious and I don't have much of it. So I really want to be like conscientious in that sense with other people. And I think I'm like very organized around arrival and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In terms of like my taxes, you know, like in terms of like the things that are going to probably send me to jail, I think I'm a little bit less organized. I definitely tend to like procrastinate out of anxiety.
Right. Same.
You know, so
like things you don't want to do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Things I don't want to do. Yeah. Actually, or like things I like physically and unable to make myself do.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one is, I'm interested by this one, is agreeableness. So basically how warm and empathetic you are.
I think pretty empathetic and warm. I feel that way, but I've gotten feedback from people who don't know me.
Dynamic feedback.
Who have been like, oh my God, you're so nice. I thought you'd be a bitch.
Oh. And but they just met that through social media?
Yeah. Or like, oh, when I met you, I thought you were a bitch or something like that. Like, I think I have like, not resting bitch face, but I guess if I don't know you or something, like I could have like a certain demeanor about myself that people find not, I don't want to say intimidating, but not maybe the warmest.
Okay.
And so I've gotten that from people. And then when they get to know me, they're like, oh my God, you're so much nicer than I thought. Huh. And then I'm like, thank
do you.
Do you
feel like, can you tell in the moment that you're doing that? Or do you feel like you're being warm to like new people?
No, I think it's normally people who, this is going to sound creepy, like who like, not are watching me, but like people who like maybe through social media think they know me or.
Okay. You're very, I could see you being intimidating. You have like very cool style and a cool point of view. And I think that can come up. It doesn't come across as like, that wouldn't come across as warm. Maybe.
Yeah.
That, I could see you being intimidated. Not warm. Warm's the wrong thing. Maybe like, I don't know. Like you're going to be like, hey, come hang out with us and join my friends.
Yeah,
but
you
are always like, hey, come out with us and join my friends. So it's interesting.
Right.
Yeah.
But I think people that don't know me sometimes think that. And then the second thing they say is like, you're so much nicer than I thought. And I was like, thank you.
It's so interesting that intimidation is often associated with coldness.
Yeah.
And because I always think about like the dream of my life would be to be a celebrity because everyone assumes like because you're intimidating, people assume you're cold, which means that like the smallest gesture of warmth makes people think that you're the nicest person in the world. But it's weird that we don't see intimidating because I actually feel like as I get older, I'm actually curious what you think. As I get older, I'm very intimidated by people who make me feel very comfortable because I notice that that is like a massive emotional intelligence and they probably know. Like, that's so powerful to, like, make everyone around you feel comfortable and welcome.
Yeah.
And now I look at that and find that a little bit intimidating.
Intimidating.
But I didn't when I was younger. You know, it's interesting as it has changed throughout my life.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think people who make you feel comfortable or welcomed, I wouldn't say I'm intimidated by them, but I'm almost, like, in awe. Like, how do you...
It's like a superpower.
How can you do this?
Yeah. Maybe intimidation. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. But... I would say I'm actually more warm and empathetic than people think. So maybe closer to like the '80s.
Eighties, yeah. No, I see
that. How about you? What do you think?
I mean, okay, like me in my 20s.
Yeah,
like 100.
Like I love everyone.
But truly, like I think I was. Yeah, I mean, warm and empathetic. I think in my 20s, I was really crazy on that front. Like very empathetic, very warm. I want to make everyone feel comfortable, everyone feel safe, everyone feel seen. I'd come off of a horrible eating disorder, which was like really traumatizing for me. And I wanted to be like, I don't want anyone ever to feel judged. Mm-hmm. Everyone's, you never know what someone's going through.
Right.
I also work in PR,
yeah,
which is just, but now in my 30s, I'm tired and I'm sick of people taking advantage of me being nice.
Okay.
And I will say this is actually, we'll get into this.
Yeah.
But one of the things about me that I think that has changed since I've moved to Paris is my agreeableness. And not necessarily for the worse, but yeah.
I agree with you. I think it's the same. I think I put up with much more, I think I had a more toxic friends when I was younger that I gave like a pass to because I was like, I feel bad for you.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, get your shit together.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not tolerating that.
Yeah. So I think.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing. Yeah, because it's hurting me. Okay. Next one is openness. So how receptive you are to new ideas and activities.
I think I'm very open. Yeah. I would say like, I don't know if 100, but like.
Very open. Yeah.
Very open. I mean, I moved to Paris.
Yeah. So a whole different call. Also, I think being kind of like groomed by New York.
Yeah.
Kind of makes you
Well, in
you
New York,
open.
You're just like always. There's always something new. So you have to be open.
Exactly. There's no option to isolate. Like you have to be, you're faced with radius. So you have to adapt.
Yeah. And it becomes almost like the norm where like if you do the same thing over and over again, you're like, where's the new thing?
Mm.
So I would say super open. Yeah.
Yeah.
How about
you? I
agree.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Pretty open.
Yeah.
I also think I'm like very, like, cause I worked in sexual wellness in New York for so long too. Like I'm pretty open-minded about, like you can tell me if like, as long as there's like, agreeing parties in all circumstances, not just sex, but like any kind of dynamic. I'm, you know, whatever makes you happy, truly.
Yeah, yeah, no, same.
Nothing can be that weird if everyone's happy, you know?
I know like so many people and so many of my friends who are like in open relationships, and I'm like, tell me more.
Yeah, as
like,
long as you both are feeling good about this. It's the only thing, I'm not very open to like one partner's feeling shit, one partner's feeling like crap.
I mean,
like, both people are happy.
Open, like, you know? Like, I don't know if I would personally be in an open relationship, but like,
no,
if
but that's
are,
open-minded if you're open with your friends like doing
and
it.
And I think I will say, and then we'll get into this later, if I would have stayed in Miami, I think I would have been much more, less open, much more close-minded.
Ooh, oh, I want to hear about that.
Because I think a lot of the people that I went to high school with, for example, are, not all of them, but like, I would say like half are very like conservative and close-minded now.
And judgmental, you think?
Yeah.
Okay, last one, my personal favorite is neuroticism. I'm laughing because two people, part of the reason I wanted to do this episode is because two people in the last 2 weeks have like solicited said to me as an offhand comment, as if it's just the most like known thing in the world that I'm neurotic. And I've just been thinking about it a lot.
Like how? They're like, hey,
it was two people who know me very well.
Okay.
And have known me a very long time. Like I would say now over 10 years. And they just were like, and you know, you're neurotic, or like, you're too neurotic to do that. Like in a way that's so, I always feel like the most
casual.
Well, yeah. The most painful comments sometimes are the ones that are like, people throw away as if there's no reason to question it. And I've been thinking about it a lot because of course it doesn't really feel very flattering to be called neurotic, especially by people who know me well.
What was the context? Like, you posted something
God,
or
I don't
like,
even remember. Yeah. One was like, it was something like, could I do something? And someone said, no, you're way too neurotic for that. And then one of them was just like drunk and just describing me as a person and was like, you know, you're a neurotic person. And I'm like,
okay, well, how in the scale from
oh
one
God,
to
100? I must be
100.
I gotta be up there. I gotta be between 90 and 100.
This is about how depressed and anxious you are.
Yeah. It's hard because I think that there's a perception of, okay, so well, if you, I mean, not to interject again, but, this study or whatever, these five traits, what they tend to find is people who rate higher on the first four. So extroversion, conscientiousness, agreeableness, openness are happier. People who rate high on neuroticism are less happy. So I think
makes sense kind of.
Yeah, it makes sense. I would say neuroticism for me is largely anxiety and a lot of like I'm very aware and like too aware.
Okay.
Like, you know, if I'm sitting at a dinner table having dinner with like, I don't know, a boyfriend, and the table next to me is having a conversation, I'll hear every single word. I'll feel the emotions. I'll be able to follow the whole thing while holding down a conversation with the person I'm with.
And then they'll be like, I'll be like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. And they'll be like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, you know,
I don't know what they were saying.
I feel like my brain is split into 100 pieces. But how are you on this? I'm curious.
I think I'm pretty high too. I'm a very anxious person.
So you hide your anxiety really well though.
I'm a high functioning anxious person.
You're neurotic.
A lot of people say that. They're like, I didn't know you were anxious. No, like I'm literally diagnosed by a psychiatrist. Wow. I'm diagnosed on two things. What is it called? Anxiety disorder and panic disorder. I used to get a lot of panic attacks when I lived in New York.
I'm finding out for the first time on the podcast.
Yeah, I ended up in the ER because I thought I was having a heart attack and it was just a panic attack. Well, not just, but it was a panic attack.
That's so interesting. Damn.
And I got them a lot when I was in New York. I haven't gotten one in years. I think New York is just like a very stressful city.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was just,
and
like,
it thrives on
that
stress. Like you feed it. It's like your lifestyle. You know,
you're like going out every night, you're drinking, you're like not taking care of yourself. Also, you're like in your 20s, so you're like, this is the time to do this now.
I also feel like those traits are celebrated and groomed. And even I think mental illness, this is kind of maybe lightly controversial, but as someone who's quite mentally ill and has had a lot of mental health problems, I think in New York, it becomes a little bit of like a badge. Like every single person has a disorder. Every single person is coping, which, by the way, love, celebrate, love a diagnosis that helps you realize something about yourself. I don't want my whole personality to be a diagnosis.
Well, same.
And in New York, I think a lot of the times it feeds like my person, like I am OCD. That is my personality. Mm-hmm. I am anxious. That is my personality. I have an eating disorder. That is my personality, you know? So.
Yeah. I think for me, a lot of people don't realize it because I guess I hide it so well. It's just like a part of who I am, but I have really bad anxiety. So I think I rank pretty high.
Wow.
Like I am the kind of person, like I always think the worst case scenario first and I'm trying, I go to therapy. So I'm trying really hard to not always think the worst thing possible. When Paul, like if Paul goes out and he doesn't text me back or call me, I'm not a person that's like, he's cheating on me. I'm like, he's dead. Which is crazy.
Like, honestly, have you heard that line? It's like they say a healthy relationship is that. They say a healthy relationship is not worried that the person is gone. Because
he's not very happy with me when I'm like.
So what do? Do you just call him a bunch or what happens?
Yeah, like, I mean, it depends. There's days where I'm like, there's days where I can talk myself out of it. Yeah. There's days where I'm like, you're being crazy. Like he's clear. He told you he was going to this bar. There's probably no cell reception there or something. And then there's days where like, it wins and I'm like, where are you? Answer me. Why haven't, and I send him like 27 text messages and then he has his red receipts on. So I can see when he reads them.
That would be call for homicide. If my husband is reading them.
And then I see, it's so funny. I see when he reads it and then I see like the three dots and I'm like, oh fuck, he's alive.
Oh fuck.
Like, he's going to kill me now. And every time we have the same fight.
That's so
funny.
He's
like, you need to stop being so crazy. I told you I was going to this bar.
He should be so thankful someone cares about him that much.
I tell him all the time.
I'm going to die like falling out of my bathtub one day. No one's going to find me for weeks.
In New York, I always thought he was being, someone pushed him on the train tracks.
Oh, God.
And jeez, in Paris, I've never actually fantasized what it is, but I just assume he's
dead. Let's not make today. We start with the fantasy.
But yeah, but that's just to explain how mentally ill I am. Like I cannot, my brain doesn't go from like, oh, he's at a bar, he'll text you later. My brain goes, he's dead.
Wow. Can I ask you a question? This is maybe tangential, but like when people say you hide it well, do you intentionally, or is it just because like to function with your family and growing up, it just wasn't like acceptable to be performative?
I don't even think I realize I'm hiding it. And I don't, like, I just think it's like, you, especially when you live in New York,
you just have to have
like a full-time job. You're like, if you have really bad anxiety, you still have to show up to the office. So it's kind of like
trained.
And obviously I've been to therapy for many years, so I have a lot of coping mechanisms and little exercises that I can like try to, you know, apply when I'm feeling like I'm feeling really anxious. So I do that, but I continue my life and people don't think that I'm having really bad anxiety.
Wow.
So it's not necessarily, I'm not like trying to hide it. It's just like shit has to get done. I can't just like cry on the couch or not do anything today. So it's kind of like the nature of capitalism.
Well, it's hard because I think that I move through life in a pretty like, I would say not high performing, but like I get stuff done.
But
I don't hide it well. Like if people are actively calling me out and saying that I'm neurotic, I clearly
but I think
come across as very
But you
anxious.
Share it a lot on social.
Maybe that's
and I think that's why people have that perception of you. If you weren't posting these things, people wouldn't think that of you.
Interesting. Okay. Anyway, okay. So those are the five. So the idea of whether or not these are fixed is controversial, right? Can they change throughout life? And in Buddhism, they try to really tell you that you have like no core identity, that there is like no core person.
So how does it work?
I don't know enough about it, but I find it interesting that they say the cause of basically of all suffering is believing that you are like one type of way, that you are one type of person.
Interesting.
So I think that's interesting because I don't know. I find catharsis kind of the same way as feeling like I can change, but also there is a comfort in knowing that I kind of just am the way
there's
I am.
There's things, that you can't change.
I want a mix of both, you know? I don't want to be,
I think that 30-50 percentage sounds feels that one's good. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, there's some things, like, I'm going to be anxious for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
That's, I think, my genetic part. Like, that's just who I am. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of things I can do to change, or not change, but other things that can complement that or that can help
that's a cool way to put that. I didn't think about that.
Like I think my dream is to be like a chill like surfer girl, but that's just not who I am. Or I'll every time I see like snowboarders or like surfers, I'm like, wow, like I would love to be this chill, but that's just not who I am.
Yeah.
So it's like I think there's a lot of other things, but I'm also like very ambitious and I'm very like driven and I like those parts of myself too. They go hand in hand with anxiety. So if I was a chill surfer, maybe I wouldn't have those other qualities of my personality. So I think I like the idea of like still having 50% of your personality that could change throughout life. And I think in the article it said something like it's like storm systems that come and go depending on like different parts of your life or outside influences. So
and some have, and so that's what we want to talk about.
Yeah.
And like some have long-lasting impacts.
Yes.
Some really change, they kind of call it your temperament. So like some change your temperament. And we thought it could be interesting because I think frankly this conversation came up, I think, kind of on this podcast.
Yeah.
But talking about how these kind of tenets of who we thought we were have really changed since coming here.
Yeah.
And you're interesting because not only have you moved, well, not only have you moved from Miami to New York to Paris, you've moved from Venezuela to Miami, you know, you've had multiple countries, multiple cultures.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I'm married to
a Frenchman.
So like I'm in a multicultural marriage, if
you
will.
Have a lot of inputs. You have a lot of storms.
Yeah. There's so many storms.
A lot of storm systems.
It's so funny that you say that because I'm like, I feel like obviously I've changed and we talked a little about this. Like, is your personality different in Paris versus New York? And I think my core personality is the same, but there's a lot of things maybe, I don't want to say like my side personality because that makes no sense, but there's a lot of things that have definitely changed like since I moved to Paris.
Yeah, what do you mean by that? Like,
I mean, I think who I am is the same. I'm the same person to my core. It's just like little things that have changed. Like because I don't speak French really well. I think like, for example, when I speak French or even when I am in France, you know, interacting with French people, I'm a little more shy. I'm a little more submissive. I'm a little more like, I'm quieter. I'm not gonna like interview a person at the dinner table because I'm not confident enough. I'm not confident in French. So, which I find, I think I'm very confident in English, in Spanish. And when I lived in New York, when I lived in Miami, I'm very confident. I don't think I'm confident in Paris with French people. With Americans, it's a different story.
It brings up an interesting question because something that these articles slash this conversation brings up is the difference between like a true personality trait and kind of a performative or external personality trait. Yeah. Because I think that there's so many blurred lines between the two. And one of the biggest things, there was this really cool article in The Atlantic that I was very obsessed with. And it's called, I Gave Myself 3 Months to Change My Personality. And actually, her name's Olga, and she just released a book.
Okay.
And we'll link to it literally like a week ago, which is just so timely for this. And it's all about changing your personality.
What does she want to change her personality for?
So neuroticism is a big one. So she like, the article is very funny. It's like very well written. And, but the reason I bring it up to that point you have around the difference between, like you said, side personality. I think of it almost like facade personality versus like internal personality, is that they say the number one way to actually change the internal personality is to fake it till you make it. It's like the biggest advice they give. So basically, you know, in like, if you're an introvert and yeah. you really want to be an extrovert, they say just force yourself to go up to someone and ask them out for a coffee or DM someone and ask them to hang out. I think that's cool. Like in the article, she ends up yeah. going to an improv class because she wants to be more open and
okay.
flexible. And in the end, they take her test on both sides of it. They do what we just did. They kind of do like this uh-huh. whole rating system on those five scales. And she was able to change it about 10% on each one. And this is in the course of 3 weeks.
Three months.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. But what are you, I want to hear from you. So we have some different stuff that we have gone, yes. like our different storms personally. I think I'm kind of curious from you to hear about career because I think that's been a big one.
Oh, for you. Such a big one. Yeah. I feel like I'm such a different person since I moved to France career wise. I think in the US, I was very driven because you have to be. Like, if you're not driven and ambitious, you lose your job, essentially. Or, yeah, you don't climb the ladder, if you will. And that puts a lot of pressure on people. And I think that brings a lot of anxieties and a lot of, like, yeah, it's just not good. I think in France, because French people don't look at their careers as, like, the only thing that matters in terms of personality-wise, when mm-hmm. you introduce yourself to people here, it would be maybe, like, the fifth or sixth question that's like, what do you do? In New York, it's like, hi, what's your name and what do you do? It's like the first thing they ask.
You know, it's so crazy because going back yeah. now, when they ask me right away, I'm like, whoa. Yeah, yeah. What immediately, I feel
private very, information.
Yes, I actually feel that way. And I also really feel like my first reaction is often, what do you want from me?
Yeah.
Because I've been so conditioned after 5 years here to say, okay, let's wait a couple yeah. of hours before we talk about our jobs, you know?
So I think the one thing career-wise that has changed is like it's taken a long time. I mean, it's still work in progress, but I don't see my career as like my number one like identity. Personality yeah. definition. Like it doesn't define my value as a person. In the US, it was all my entire value was around my career. And so that's why anytime you get fired or you get laid off, it's so much harder because not only do you lose your financial like income, but it's also like a part of your personality is gone.
Yeah.
And here it's like, yeah, like I work doing this, who cares? Like, yeah. like really not even a part of who you are.
Do you have certain personality traits that you feel your job encouraged or your job brought out that now you feel they're not quite so strong? Like for example, for me, I feel like likability in my career was
well, you have to be
huge.
You
right?
have to be likeable.
Yes, that was my whole key to success. Now, in the end, I look back, that wasn't my whole key to success. There were other things, but yeah. at the time, so I was so focused on that part, sort of this agreeableness. And now that my job isn't my whole identity, being likable doesn't have to be my whole identity. And I feel like it's given me more room to play with yeah. my level of agreeableness. Sorry, I cut you off, but I want to hear what you.
Yes, but it's very different US to France. I think obviously being likable here is important, but I worked in like the luxury sector here and it's very strategic. And it's like the way you talk to people, what you say, all these things, it's very political, which I'm not used to because I come from like creative fields where it's like no one cares about
people kind of say what they think. Yeah.
And so it actually, I got in trouble a lot at the beginning for being myself, which I've always thought is the best thing you could be. And here's like,
that's another American trope. Yeah.
And here's like, can you please stop being yourself? So I will say that was the biggest like change. I really had to become like the person they wanted you to be.
Did you feel that seep into your personal life at all?
No.
Really? Wow.
No, okay. I don't think it did because I hated it. Because I was like, this is lame and all of you suck. Like, there's not a single innovative, cool person here, at least in my experience, the people that I met.
So interesting. Wow. Damn.
When they were like, change who you are, I was like, great.
For what?
I'll do that.
You?
Well, I'll do that for work because I got to get this paycheck. But
you didn't
when
deep
I
down
clock
believe it was
out,
a better way to be.
Yeah, when I clock out, I used to tell this to my coworkers all the time. The least cool thing about me is that I work here. Whereas a lot of the people that I worked with, the coolest thing for them was the fact that they worked there. So I think that was the difference. I think if I was more, I don't know if I felt that way about the company where I was like, it's such an honor to work here, I would have maybe.
That's true, because then maybe it would have infiltrated your personal life because it would have been in line with your value system. But this
exactly,
one wasn't.
But because I was like, you guys Yeah. This is lame.
Damn, so interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what about, you brought up an interesting subject, which is you being married to Paul.
Yeah.
And we've talked a lot about how relationships, so actually in these articles, a key thing they say is one of the biggest ways to change who you are is to marry someone who has different traits than you. And I'm curious, one, just on kind of just a relationship level, it doesn't have to be culture. I mean, obviously you can't take those two things apart, but how has Paul, if at all, and being married to him affected you,
your like so much.
Core personality traits?
I think I want to say a lot, because obviously you are with this person. You spend the most time with this person. So they're going
to And you love and respect them. So I don't think the things they do don't feel like something you have to run away from.
But I do think I'm very stubborn about my personality. Hmm. And so like he can make comments about certain things and I'm like, great, I don't care.
That's probably why it works.
Well, he's never made comments about like my personality necessarily, but like when
just
we
like your interior design choice.
No, well, yeah, I've learned that now that I share space with someone, I can't just buy stuff. Like I have to ask him, hey, do you like this painting? Which is fine. Like that's just like living with someone. But he always jokes and makes fun of like certain outfits that I wear, because he's a very like he has a very specific style. He's very
monochrome,
like, minimalistic. Yeah. Like, and I'm very like. Patterns, colors, cheetah print. And he's like, what the fuck are you wearing? But I think it works, because I don't take anything he says personally. And I think he likes, quote unquote, making fun of me. Like, it's almost like a joke between us. Like, and the few times he has said things that I'm like, this is not cool, this is out of line, he apologizes. So I think it's good and it works. I think there's a lot of banter. Like French people love to complain and criticize, and I find that
that's
like something Paul does. And I do think on the flip side, I've helped him, or like I try to be like, stop being so negative, like let's look at the positive.
Well, that's
which is
I'm
a very
curious.
American thing.
Well, not a Gabby Petrioni thing.
Well, but Americans I think in general are very much like, you can do it.
Yes.
You
know? Optimism. I think we also have like a lot of upward mobility, which doesn't, it's not so tied in with defeatism. Is that a word? But yeah, so if you look back on these five things, so extroversion, conscientiousness, agreeableness, openness, neuroticism, has he impacted any of these for you?
I think probably open-mindedness. Because I'm dating someone from a different culture in some way. So I have to be open-minded to like, accept this new like quirks or rituals or traditions, you know, that are not necessarily the things that I want to do or that
that's
I
really
grew
point.
Up doing.
Yeah.
And I think he's actually helped a lot with my anxiety. He's a very chill person who doesn't really get stressed out a lot. Like he obviously does, but not as much as me. So it's really interesting to have someone who's like, you didn't answer your phone, you're dead, and then have that person be like, that's an insane thing to say, because it kind of brings me back.
Right. Or a friend who's like equally as anxious.
If he was the same way, it would be a problem, because then we would feed off each other. And so I like that he's very like, why would you say that? That's so,
so
stupid. You know,
I noticed I always, the last few guys I've dated have been really calm. And I am really drawn to exactly that. I always want to be around someone who kind of exactly brings me down to earth when I'm having to spill out. The issue I've been realizing is I'm drawn to guys who manifest as calm, but the issue is they're not calm. They're emotionally repressed.
Okay. And which is most men.
Which is most men. But I've been now trying to identify the differences early stage. We'll talk about this on the next dating app episode, because I find it interesting. But early stage, the difference between someone who generally has worked on themselves enough, knows how to process thoughts, has enough self-talk to say, you know what, this is not something worth overreacting to, versus the difference between someone who like literally like an option for a feeling comes in and they like bat it away.
And it's hard to tell until...
It's really hard to tell.
Until shit goes down, essentially.
Well, until you actually frankly ask them to open up and have a vulnerable conversation.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I can understand why that helps, because it is cathartic and it changes you to be around. You start to learn their thought patterns, and I think it regrooves new neural pathways in terms of how you respond to things. Yeah.
And also it's like, yeah, there's certain things I always used to say when I was younger, like I would never change for a guy. And like when I would see my friends who would date like certain guys and then they would change their personalities, I'd be like, that's so lame. But the reality is, when you're dating someone, they're gonna affect parts of your personality. Like that's just the way it is. Like maybe you date a guy who loves to do, I don't know, CrossFit, and you get really into CrossFit. I don't know. Like, it sounds lame, but like, it's just the way it is. Like,
I think there's a difference between lifestyle and personality, but yeah. Lifestyle can impact personality. Of course. So it's like, maybe you're with someone who is really outdoorsy and they help you do things outdoors, or they encourage you to do things outdoors. But that doing things outdoors inspires a new sense of self-trust and confidence and independence, because you learn, okay, I can set up a tent. I know how to start a fire, which I think then can in turn affect personality. So I think there's levels of it, you know?
Yeah. Also, like, I saw this with a friend of mine who at one point she dated a guy that was very politically outspoken and she wasn't really before.
Interesting.
And then she became very politically outspoken. Really? And even, I mean, they're not together anymore, but even now she still kind of is. Yeah.
Maybe she realized,
not as much as she was before, but she, yeah. I don't think she maybe would have tapped into that part of herself.
Right. Or realized that was in line with her values and maybe didn't realize.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's cool.
Have you dated anyone that has impacted your personality, like long term?
God, I should have thought about that before we wrap this up. I don't know. It's a good question. Anyone who's affected my personality.
I'm thinking of this one friend, the political.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what my ex really called out about me was that I'm very impatient.
Okay.
And impatience ties to my irritability, which ties to a lot of parts of me, which ties to my neuroticism, which is the trait that I want to affect the most. I really want to change it just because I think I'd be happier. So noticing that has been helpful for me, because now I notice the things that I thought were just me is actually something that I have the option to have an impact on. I actually think that has been a really interesting part of moving to Paris, has been seeing parts of me that I thought were just me, but they're actually parts of me that I'm not super thrilled by, not out of a judgment so much as they don't feel good. Like, being irritable doesn't feel good, or being overly accommodating for people when you have to be basically sacrificing your own desires doesn't feel good. But these are things that when you grow up in Wisconsin, where I grew up, you feel like they're your personality, but they're actually optional. There's ways to impact them. And I'm realizing, I think that it's really, really cool to move to a new country and get to start to make conscious decisions about who I want to be.
Yeah.
And so I can be a more patient person. I really believe that.
Paris has helped you?
No.
She's like, it's made it worse.
No, Paris has not helped my patience.
Oh, what has Paris maybe changed or help? How are you different in Wisconsin?
I want to know this for you too.
Versus Paris, for example.
Yeah. I feel like we both have these lists. I think I'm learning, one, the neuroticism has around career, around ambition, around success, that kind of feeling, just like the life existential crisis I constantly had growing up, because here people don't, like, exactly
they
like
don't
you said,
really talk about
they don't it. Care. It's not they your whole care. Personality. So that's really helped me calm down around that. I feel like I can have a more normal approach now. Granted, it's me, so I'll never have a normal approach to anything, like a slightly more normal approach to my job. But, and I also think confrontation. Since moving here, I've never once in my life set a boundary, basically on anything.
Okay.
And something about seeing the way French people, they just say no to everything, you know? They just, like, are not, they'll confront you if they're unhappy about something. They have no issue. And I think that's helped me. That's where I talk about agreeableness. Because I think being agreeable was such a beacon of aspiration. It was something you had. In Wisconsin, right. Like, if you are not agreeable, you're basically a bad person.
Yeah.
And now I realize, one, it's not making me happy to be agreeable. Right. To this point that I'm walked all over. And two, I don't hear being agreeable is not a beacon of, like, it's not something that everyone aspires to be. It's
not here.
Frankly, it's oftentimes the opposite.
Yeah.
And now I don't want that, but I like to make this
somewhere
decision.
In the middle.
Yeah. To see, like, oh, I actually have a choice on this. What about you? Because I feel like also I want to hear about the difference between Miami, New York. Like, you must be a different person in all three cities a little bit, or like at least have evolved between them.
I think Miami, I never felt like I fit in, or like was my place.
Okay.
I always knew it was like, this is not where I want to be. So I always felt like off there. And like I said, it's a conservative town. A lot of people are a lot more, like, it's very close-minded. It's like the same thing over and over again. You say the same people, hang out with the same kind of, like, I don't know. It's like very much of like the same. New York opened up my world. Like, I really, even though Miami obviously is a big city.
How old were you when you moved to New York?
24.
Okay. Oh, you talked about this. Oh, yeah.
New York was like, this is life. This is where I'm meant to be. Like, this is so cool. I just felt like I had more independence. You can walk places. You can take the metro. You can... Everything is open until like 4 a.m. There's people out in the streets. There's just like life everywhere, which is like, I mean, I grew up in Miami in the suburbs, so I wasn't in like South Beach with like, you know, the Versace mansion or whatever, you know? So I think also Miami's a party town. So it's like the quote unquote culture there. It's like you club, you go to the beach. Okay. Now there's like the Science District and the Art District, but that wasn't there when I grew up there. Mm. So the culture there was like party beach. That was really... it. New York, I was like, there's so much to do. A million things. Every neighborhood is like a whole world. So I think New York was the first place where I was like meeting people that I would have never met in Miami. For example, I discovered drag shows and I befriended, well, I had gay friends in Miami, but I befriended people who were like non-binary and trans and all these things that I'm like, I would have never met people like this in Miami. Yeah. Maybe I would have later on, but I had never met people like that in Miami.
You know what's cool about what you're saying is I was talking to a friend the other day about this. Sometimes when you're around certain people and in certain environments, you feel off. Like you feel something's wrong with me, or like you're saying, I never fit in.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is kind of, it sounds like what you're kind of saying is this city helped you realize who you are and realize there actually isn't anything about you that you need to change.
Yeah.
I felt the same way in New York, where I always felt weird growing up. And then I moved to New York and suddenly was like, oh, I actually don't think I'm as weird as I thought I was. I think which is cool. It's almost like the opposite of what this episode is about, but it's cool to think that you could. Yeah.
I think New York allows you to be whoever you want to be. And so I think that's why it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. You will always find a place to fit in New York. I remember one time I was wearing like a hat or a beret or something. I went back home to Miami for holiday break. And this guy I went to high school with was like, oh my God, you're so funny. You're like a cartoon to me, the way you dress. Oh. And I'm like, I'm literally wearing a hat. I was like, what?
And how do you even respond to that?
I was like, I probably do look like a cartoon to them. Like, I probably, like...
How do people dress in Miami?
Huh?
How do people dress in Miami?
I mean, it really depends. Because
the place I went, everyone was wearing, like, stilettos and, like, their boobs were hanging out. And, like,
yeah, it depends. Like, yeah. And then, like, my best friend, Maddie, she's always had, like, tattoos and, like, purple hair and shit like that. So every time we would go out, like, I had, like, my hipster glasses and we would go out and, like, our local Publix and people would be, like, looking at us like these fucking weirdos. Whereas in New York, like, you could be, like, in a thong and no one, like, turns around to look at you.
Yeah.
So... I do think to a lot of the people that I went to high school with, I'm probably like a cartoon. They're probably like, what is she wearing now? This crazy girl with a beret or whatever fuck I was wearing.
I mean, obviously growing up in Wisconsin, it's, you know, similar.
Yeah.
I mean, now as I'm older, I'm more boring, but for the most part, I didn't dress like other people. It's kind of interesting to think that you're kind of suffocated where you're from if you don't feel like you fit in.
Yeah.
Then you move to New York. This is just like our trajectory, but I think it can be common. Then you move to New York and all of a sudden it's just like your boundaries open and you're like, oh, I actually can be the full person.
I can start over.
Yeah. Then you can like, so then it's like your full self comes out. And then what I found interesting is about moving around and trying new cultures is I can edit. Like I wouldn't have been able to edit from Wisconsin because I didn't really know who I was.
Right.
Then I moved to New York. I could be my full self.
Yeah.
And now I can kind of like.
So who are you in Paris?
Clip away. I don't know. Oh my gosh. Like, that's like the podcast teacher. Yeah. Like, who are you? Who are you? Who do you want to be?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's such a huge question.
So what?
Still neurotic, apparently.
So you were yourself in New York.
I feel like I was myself with like mental illness, maybe lightly amplified.
Right.
I think to be honest, I was my true natural self at the time. Mm-hmm. But now I, for some reason, moving abroad and having international friends, that's key as well. Mm-hmm. I'm finally able to say, I don't know. I don't think me as my whole self is, this is complicated because I'm not saying I'm judging myself or I want to like change the core loveliness of, you know, who I am at my root. But I think there's a lot of stuff around that, that I think I want to play with a bit, you know?
Right.
I really want to play with how I am in relationships. I'm like fearful, avoidant. And like, so yeah, it's really helpful to know that New York brought out these very natural tendencies that either are, were a combination of genetics plus However I was raised and socialized. Right. So that all came to light. And now I feel like I'm in this stage of being like, I don't think all of those are helpful for the person, for the life that I want to live. So like my neuroticism is not making me happy. My 100 on the agreeableness scale is not making life easier for me. So it's cool to think we have that opportunity, but I don't know if it would ever have happened.
If you would have stayed in New York, you would have been like, this is who I am.
Yes.
And then being in Paris, because you do have to assimilate a little to a new culture.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what made you think.
Also, you see options. Something about seeing options and how other people lead their life, which you, it's weird because you'd think in New York you see that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So anyway, it's interesting to think that there is. That's what I think it was interesting for this podcast to talk about.
How you change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When
but also I think age affects that.
That's true. I mean, it's also true that we're both in our 30s. And
But again, I do think moving to Paris probably made you be, I can't be my New York self here because it wouldn't work because I need to assimilate. Mm. Even if it's just a bit, you do need to assimilate to like fit into a new culture.
Wait, Danny, that's such a good point because I think there's been growing pains. Like, did you have, so the first few years, I faced a lot of reluctance when I was faced with the way to behave. So for this is like a dumb example, but like when faced with like, you can never get the check at a table.
Yeah.
So that first annoyed me. It annoyed me, annoyed me, annoyed me. And then I had this moment.
You accepted?
Yeah, where I accepted, but then respected.
Yeah.
No, not for everything. That's what I find interesting. Now, French people's inability to talk to strangers, I accept maybe, I don't respect it. I don't want to be that. I want to continue my American, Wisconsin, can talk to a wall, you know? I think that notion of like patience, of appreciating downtime, of appreciating leisure and long conversations, that I've had a growing pain around. Mm-hmm. And now I want to accept and adopt it. And that's, you're totally right. Like, I think you have to adapt some things to live, but you don't necessarily have to like respect and like internalize all of them. But some of them I want to internalize.
You don't have to become French. Like, there's a lot of things that I agree, I'm never going to be that way, but yes, I can go and have a coffee for 3 hours and pay €3. Or like, there's just like a lot of nice things that the lifestyle in Paris has afforded me that maybe were like growing pains at the beginning. And now I'm like, I actually really like this. I don't think I can go back to New York now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I agree with you. I think now.
Do you feel like now you take the traits that this place has given you and bring them back? I know we were talking about this idea of like, yeah, how much do you change between the places you go, the people you meet? How much do you say, okay, like, you know, for me, patience is now, sorry, it's not, but aspirationally it would be like core to who I am. And I bring that patience back to Wisconsin and back to New York when the train's not coming. How much do you do that? How much, you know what I mean?
I feel it a lot when I go back home and I'm like annoyed at things that a person who studied abroad would be annoyed. You know, like I think the biggest shift in me personality wise maybe has been my work-life balance and how work is no longer my number one priority in life and just like enjoying life is, which is I think a very French thing of like enjoy your life. It doesn't matter if you're making $1 million because at the end of the day, if you don't have the time to enjoy it, what's the point? And I think that's very American, where all my friends work to the bone, weekends, nights, overtime. I'm okay with being like, I'm taking some time off from work.
How powerful to allow yourself chances to question whether the direction you're going is the direction you want to be, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. But anyway, just to kind of close this up, I'll just bring one more thing up that kind of goes along with what we've been talking about. Have you ever heard of code switching?
Okay, yes, but I'm pretty basic. So I'm pretty basic white girl. So I want to hear more.
So basically, in theory, code switching applies to someone who shifts the way they speak or behave or like present themselves depending on the context of where they are or who they're surrounded with.
Hmm.
So it's basically flipping between different versions of themselves depending on where they are or who they're with. And it often comes up in conversations about race, identity, and navigating different cultural spaces.
Mm.
It's very common with, I would say, I mean, I'm sure everywhere, but Black Americans.
Yeah, this is a
context. Or minorities in the United States. Yeah. But I think minorities anywhere in the world, actually. I kind of do it. And so I thought it was an interesting topic to bring up because you're like, what, you do that? What do you mean?
Because also I think the question too is that personality or is that like an, you know, you said like facade personality or does maybe behaving that way affect core personality? You know, like what's the...
I think it's, your facade.
Okay.
It's your facade, but maybe a little bit of your core personality, because
maybe how long you do it too.
Well, you're also like doing it to accommodate people and sometimes. So I looked some stats up because I wanted to see how do people, like, is there any like not science, but statistics around here? And I thought it was very interesting that there was a research that kind of found that 54% of people say they code switch to make other people feel comfortable. And that would be my case. So when I say code switch is when I speak to like my other Latin friends, if it's just people who are Latin, I switch a lot between English and Spanish and I'll do Spanglish a lot. If there's even one person in the room that doesn't speak Spanish, I won't do that. And for me, it's more like, I don't want you to feel out of place or uncomfortable, like you don't understand me. But if everybody else speaks Spanish, I will be doing that back and forth. It's just like, it comes natural to me. And it's crazy because it's like, I don't really think about it.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that I do. The other thing is, like, in the research, they said 48% of people code switch to avoid being stereotyped. Which is another thing that I think unconsciously I do.
Yeah.
Because I don't want, and it's not that I don't want people to know that I'm Latin, because it's not that I'm ashamed of it. But I think it comes again with the whole, like, maybe you can't relate to me, to this version of me.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah.
And for me, it's subconscious. I don't necessarily do it that way in purpose.
Yeah.
And then the last statistic is 40% do it to get ahead professionally. Mm. And I think
people,
this is
like
interesting.
People who are like them, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think this applies to a lot of people who are very different. The way they speak and present themselves professionally is very different to the way they speak and present themselves outside
personal,
of a professional environment. Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine being at my past corporate job and like switching to Spanglish. They would have been like, is she okay? What's wrong
so
with her?
So interesting.
And then the last thing I'll say on code switching, the best visual representation of it that I've seen. Have you ever seen Obama code switch?
No.
He is, to me, the funniest representation, because funniest because it's just so, like, you know, we know Obama as this politician that speaks a certain way and acts a certain way. And then there's a few videos throughout the years where he was in office that people caught of him code switching, where he's like, for example, there's one video where he's shaking hands. I think it was like a basketball team that had won something. Mm-hmm. And so first he shakes the hand of the three coaches who all happen to be white. And he just does like a typical handshake. And then I think it was like Kevin Durant or something, the first player. And they just like a completely different kind of greeting. And then there's a really funny video of him. I think he's somewhere in Washington, D.C., ordering a hot dog, part of like a political thing, and he like goes to pay, and I guess the cashier is a black man too, and he says, do you want your change? And he goes, nah, we good. And it's just like so funny, because then he immediately turns around and talks to someone else and like, my fellow Americans, you know, and like
it seems exhausting, but I wonder if it maybe just comes,
well,
yeah,
when you're a politician, I'm assuming even if you're white, you're doing code switch
time. Yeah.
In some
I
level.
I really wonder, I mean, I know I'm being like a little existential about it, but I really wonder if, and I don't know if I'm even allowed to use code switching for me, for what I'm describing, because like, I don't know if it works for like white people.
I think it's more common within minorities, but I think anyone can, literally anyone can,
because
code
what
switch.
I wonder is like, I mean, whatever, it could be code switch, it could be adapt, but like the more, so remember that thing I told you about how the number one way to change your personality is to basically pretend you have that personality.
Exactly.
So I do wonder at what point, like, do you have to, you code switch or adapt? Like, this is such a not right example, but I go home to Wisconsin and the customer service is like crazy. Like, people are like, they don't just tell you, ask you if you had a nice day. They truly ask you your entire life story every time you go to Walmart or whatever. But I wonder how much you have to, so then I have to play along, right? Yeah. I ask them about their day. But if I did that then for decades, that becomes
part
a trait, then that becomes a personality. Yeah. So it's so interesting. I feel like I've left this conversation
with
really,
more questions than answers.
Questions. Exactly. I've left it with more questions because it made me really think about what is, you brought it up first, but what is external facade personality? What is internal? How do they, what is the feedback system between them, and how do they affect each other? And then how do other, like how do external forces shape both of those? And how are they all tied? You know,
we haven't even covered how social media has affected
Oh God. I mean,
the way we present ourselves, but That's another episode.
Yeah. Oh my God. Okay. Well, we could literally talk about this forever, but this has made me have so many interesting thoughts. I think this is an interesting conversation. We'll link to the articles we mentioned
and the Obama video.
So and the Obama video.
I have it here. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Cool. And Danny's cartoon outfits.
Yeah. It was literally a hat. I remember.
Alrighty. Time for our next segment. How do you not know this? This is our segment where we introduce the other person to an aspect, something happening in culture that they don't know about, and then we kind of shame them a little bit for not knowing about it. So what do you got today?
Okay, mine is random but not random. It's actually like an overlap of cultures, if you will, American and French. So did you know Erewhon, the fancy, healthy?
I've never been.
Me either. But it's basically like a super fancy, expensive, healthy grocery store in California. They opened one in Paris.
Wait, what?
Yeah. I know. I was like, what?
Wait, where? Like now it's open?
It's open. We should go. Can we do a field trip
there? Oh my God, what?
It's inside of the...
We didn't tell each other what our ones were today. No, I know. So we actually am like shocked right now.
This is real. It's
where?
Merci. So you know the store Merci? Not the main one. So they also opened a second store in the first.
Didn't know that either.
Me either. When I
Where in the first?
This. I don't know. It's in the first. It's kind of like by not opera. It's kind of by, what's that park? It's not Tuileries. It's the other one.
I don't know.
Where the like black and white stripey things. Anyway.
Oh, Palais Royal.
Yes, Palais Royal. Yeah. I was going to say Grand Palais, but it's not Grand Palais. So it's around there. So in the first, like very central. So Merci opened a second store. And I guess this second store has a little Erewhon inside.
How small? It must have to be so small.
I couldn't find any pictures, which is why I was like, I did a lot of research, but I found finally a timeout article in French that does confirm that this is true. It opened during Fashion Week, so a few weeks ago in March. And basically it has all the LA staples, like the Hailey Bieber smoothie, but also some...
We are
like,
truly living in dystopia.
I know. But it also has like French exclusive items, like a matcha croissant.
Okay.
And an herbal infusion using local ingredients, for example. So what I was able to find through my research was it's about 15 euros for a smoothie.
Okay.
Which...
Not shocked because it's probably like 30 in LA.
But...
I think like, they're literally like $28 in
yeah,
LA.
Yeah, but I'm like, who is going... That's why I was like, we need to go because we need to... I want to do investigative journalism to see who's going.
We
got to
figure out
thing.
How to... We'll be little portable mics maybe.
Yeah, because I'm like, do you think French people are going to this? There's no way.
It's international.
I'm like, who asked for this? Tourists.
Oh, I'm so intrigued. Well, this brings me to what I want to do for one of our upcoming topics, which we talked about, which is like maybe globalization between New York and
it's gotten
Paris
too far.
To the point. Maybe it's I guess out of New York, LA, and Paris. Yeah.
But yeah, so the you can find lavender infused chia puddings using Provence sourced herbs. And you can also get, I don't know how to pronounce this, adaptogenic.
You know your girl works in wellness PR over here.
What is an adaptogenic?
Yeah, it's like supposed to affect you. Like it's somehow like supposed to like supposed to have an impact on you.
So not a regular eclair. Yeah. One that is gonna affect
this
you.
Sounds like it was written by an AI bot. Someone said mesh Erewhon with Paris and generate five
literally,
ideas for us written
like,
by an AI. Yeah.
I think they put it on ChatGPT.
Yes,
like
literally.
Create a French menu for
Erewhon.
Yeah. And that's what happened.
They just mashed together two different things. Yeah.
Before I talk shit about it, I think we should go try the smoothies.
And then we'll talk shit about
and
it.
And then
after.
We talk shit about it. But I would love to go there just to see the space, try the food and also or the drinks and the food and see who is going to this thing. Is it empty? Is it full of people? Is it full of tourists? So we should do a field trip. So that's my how did you not know this?
Cool.
And it's not a pop-up. I initially thought it was a pop-up, but no, it's there for life.
Well, we'll see, but well, in theory it's
for
there
now.
For life. Yeah.
Yeah. So ooh. What's yours?
Oh, mine's like way more serious. That's so cool. I really want to go. Now that is it still open right now? I want to go. mine is, okay, so I kept seeing these people on Instagram post this book. And one person blocked out the title of the book and said, I don't want to post this because I might get shadow banned. And then I was intrigued. And then I was listening to Pod Save the World. It's like the Pod Save America branch off. And they were talking about it. And they said, we were going to have this author on. And she had to cancel because her name is Sarah Wynn Williams. And she wrote a book called Careless People. And it's about, it's like basically an expose on Meta. So,
did she used to work at Meta?
Yeah. So, but then,
So she wrote this whole expose, which like accuses people of sexual assault. It accuses. So apparently in the podcast, they talked a lot about. So Instagram, this is just one tidbit, but they have a lot of like kind of data tracking policies that they then cater ads and things to. One of them was when a person takes a selfie and then deletes their selfie, Instagram tracks that and then serves them beauty products in that moment. Isn't that crazy?
Oh, sorry. I'm like leaning closer to Gabby as she's saying this. What it's, in the Black Mirror?
Yeah. So she writes about this, all this stuff, and so many other things. She writes a lot about the election. She writes about how when they helped Trump, basically, so the Trump campaign really used Meta in a lot of different ways to generate support for Trump. And yeah. They, in a big meeting she was in, they were like, we now, they're like, can we hire, they basically were like, wow. They thought that they would be really disturbed. And the people running the meeting said, can we hire them? We want to hire that campaign person on our team. They used our platforms in such interesting ways. Can we bring them on? We need to find other ways that we can like basically manipulate people. That's and they crazy. Know how to do it. So we want to bring them on. And so there's a lot of different stuff. So Facebook basically issued essentially a
PR
cease
response?
And desist. Oh. No. They basically filed a court order. I'm going to say all the legal terms wrong. Okay. They had to bring in a emergency arbitrator who then ruled on the side of Facebook because they said that she had basically signed a non-disparagement agreement when she left. And obviously, I mean, I've had to sign agreements like this at shitty companies I've worked for, and she disobeyed it. She wrote an entire book disparaging. So they said she can no longer promote or okay. sell, but the book is still for sale.
Of course.
At least, I'm not sure if you look online, it might be. It's definitely in bookstores. They were saying on the podcast that no one was buying it at first, and now it's unfindable. Sure. Like, it's completely sold out. It's like flying off the shelves. Everyone wants
is
to know.
Is she okay?
So, I don't know. So, she had to cancel the interview with this podcast. She had to cancel all of her interviews. So, now her publisher is saying there's absolutely no way they're going to agree to it. They're just going to have to go back and arbitrate. But she didn't show up for the arbitration, apparently.
Okay. This scares me for her too.
But the book is out. So it's kind of like the thing's been said. So there's no point in.
Let's put eyes on her. Like,
yeah, I know. God, I know at this point.
Eyes on her. Like, let's make sure.
I know. It's crazy. But now apparently people from Facebook who are current employees, I find this a little kiss ass, are like speaking out in favor of some of the executives who were like told that they were sexually harassing people. And I'm like, guys, I think you might be on the wrong side of history on
this
one.
That's really interesting. Yeah. I know like a handful of people at work. Mainly Instagram, but Meta, and one of them is like she's posting cryptic things all the time. It's like not having a good time, stressful moments, like shit like that. That I'm like, well, we elect twice if you're
elected, basically a dictator. So
yeah, but then the people that work on the beauty side are all like business as usual. Like, really? Look at my lunch. Oh my god, I love the Instagram office, and they're just like carrying on like they're not.
Working for the
company. That's like, also, did you see, this is such a like side thing, but I was going to bring it for the how did you not know this segment 1 week, but I forgot. So Mark Zuckerberg just turned 40 like a few maybe weeks
ago.
Yeah, months or weeks ago. And I need to pull up the video and show it to you, but you know that guy, I forget his name, he has that song that's like, this beautiful things that I've
done. Benson Boone.
That one. And he has like that jumpsuit.
Yep. He does backflips all the time.
Guess who was wearing it?
No.
Yeah. And guess who did a flip?
Gross. No.
And guess who?
What? He did a backflip?
Actually, I don't remember what the flip, but I need to pull up the video. Let's
Google
pause.
I need to Google this right now. Mark?
I watched it and I was 40. Like, what?
Oh, that Google autofilled that one for me.
No!
Oh my god.
I think he's having a midlife crisis. Stop. Did you saw him? Did you see him?
This is not real. Look.
Wait, but you have to see the video. He's singing. Or I don't know if he's singing or lip syncing, but
I feel nauseous.
I felt
who let this be recorded?
Yeah,
himself.
He posted it. I think go on at Mark.
Wow, that made me really not feel well.
I'm sorry.
It's so annoying because if he were a nice, not evil, I don't know, empire guy, I'd be like, whatever. He's just lame and like eager. Like, that's fine. But the guy who started an app to judge women for their appearance then basically is torturing young girls.
I don't think he has a lot of good qualities. Don't shadow ban me.
Gross. But yeah, we're going to get shadow banned for this app. That's all right. Yeah. Okay.
Time for our next segment.
Snack and spiral, spiral and snack. Alrighty, that theme song gets more depressing every single time. It's okay. Nightmare fuel. I keep thinking, should we do snack first or spiral first? I guess we keep doing snack smart first. Okay, do snack.
Snack? Yeah. Okay, I'll start. So I have a few things that I picked from the American Week from Picard. So
I think you need to explain.
I will.
Okay. I will. Reel it back.
Let me bring it back. So Picard, I think we've mentioned that before, but Picard is basically like a grocery store here that everything is frozen. It's actually really good. I love it. I swear by it. And then every once in a while, like, I don't know how often, but they have like themed weeks. They'll have like Mediterranean week, Latin week, whatever. Right now they have American week, which is the most unhinged time of the year for them. So essentially what they do is they create a line of products of frozen meals or food inspired by different cultures, in this case, American. So it's like comfort foods, essentially. But the funny thing about it is like it's always off. Like it's not... It's like,
do you think they consult any Americans on doing it, or it's just all French people's perception of America?
I will say no, just based on the product.
Yeah, based on what I just ate as well, I would also say no.
So I think they grab like an American dish and they have to put like some sort of like a French twist or whatever their perception of American food is. And obviously, I don't think like French people think very highly of like the culinary world in the United States, but I think Americans are really good at comfort food and like snacking food, but somehow they grab those things and turn them into something else. So for example, just
so they bastardize everything we know and love.
Kind of. It's not even bastardized. It's just add things that are not necessary to foods that are like already good.
Yeah.
And so they'll have like obviously a cheeseburger, which actually that one's like pretty tame, nothing crazy.
Really?
Okay. They'll have like, so instead of like having mac and cheese, it's like mac and cheese bites. So it's like deep fried.
Oh, like, no. Okay.
Like bread it.
Have you had cheese. It?
No, but someone, I posted about it and someone messaged me and said, it's actually really good.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but
okay.
It's like, yeah, it can't be bad. It's
mac deep fried
mac and cheese.
Yeah.
They have like carrot cake.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. I didn't know that was like distinctly American.
A New York style hot dog, which just looked like a hot dog. Mm-hmm. I don't know what makes it.
Normal
I guess.
Hot dog.
Yeah. And then they had...
I want a Chicago-style dog.
They had Chicago-style really? Pizza, oh, which I'm like, arguably the worst kind of pizza.
Okay, hold up. As a Midwesterner,
well, it's
disagree.
Not... Okay, I'm a thin crust girly, so I don't like deep dish. But they do have a deep dish, so it looked interesting. They also had an egg muffin, which we tried, actually was one of the few items where I was like, yes, we want this.
We basically finished
this.
It. Yeah.
It was really good, but it was weird. It was off because instead of having... like a meat patty or like a sausage patty, they put like a hash brown.
Yeah.
But it worked.
It worked.
Yeah. I will say in this case, this was good.
And actually the texture of the egg held up.
Yeah.
Which so basically, for a frozen item was impressive.
Yeah. So basically this one was basically an egg muffin with egg. It had cheese. It had like hash brown and onions.
Yeah.
So again, not what you normally or like a traditional egg muffin would have, but it worked.
Yeah.
Then I also picked up the spiced corn. So basically like corn ribs. Mm-hmm. Those
I
were really good.
Rib. Yeah.
And then they also had corn dogs, which I was very excited about because I love a corn dog. But the interesting thing about this corn dog is it didn't have a sausage.
The interesting thing about this corn dog was it wasn't a corn dog.
It wasn't a corn dog. Let's be real. So the weird
there was
trippy,
no dog.
There was no dog inside. So basically it tastes like a corn dog because the dough tasted like corn
but
dog.
I just like I'm concerned why that is. Did they soak that in hot dog water?
No.
Why did the dough taste like a hot dog?
I don't know, but basically the inside was it had mozzarella cheese, jalapenos, and bacon bits. So again, in theory, it should work, but it just didn't. Because I'm like, a corn dog is so simple.
It's like when people describe LaCroix as like the memory of a fruit. It was like the memory of a corn dog.
For me, it was just like, this is so simple. Throw a sausage in there. Yeah. We don't need jalapeno. We don't need mozzarella cheese.
Yeah, but they had to do their little variation on it.
And I will say that was a fail for me. And then the other thing that we didn't try today, but I tried before, they also have hash browns, which initially I was very excited about until I opened the package and realized it was hash browns, but they had like a cheese sauce. And I was like, once again, we don't need it.
Did you try the cheese sauce or you didn't like, you didn't try it?
I put it in the air fryer. I tried it with the cheese sauce and I was like, I don't need this cheese sauce. Great. I won the, like,
was the texture
naked.
Of the hash brown good? You want it was good. Naked yeah. hash brown?
I want
that'd
the naked
be such
hash.
A good band name. Naked hash brown?
Yeah.
Naked hash. Naked hash.
Naked hash. I wanted a naked hash. And
I wish we had a title of that.
I know.
Like, I wish we could do that.
But all that to say, head to your local Picard. Take a look at the selection. There's so much. Obviously, I couldn't buy everything because there's just way too much. I think my favorite right now is the egg muffin and the corn ribs were really good. Highly recommend both of us. Both of those. I think they should hire an American consultant for next year because...
I mean, could this not advice not be given for every single time they try to do anything American? Even like a copywriter for any of this stuff? It's like hire one single person who speaks English fluently. It's so weird.
I just think, it's very unhinged.
That's a fun theme.
It's a fun concept. Yeah, I think everybody enjoys it. A lot of the Americans in Paris get very excited.
We love
when
the attention
week,
of being mocked.
The week comes around, we're all like, what are they going to do now, these crazy French people? And it's always crazy and it's always unhinged. And I would say 50-50. Sometimes it really works, like in the egg muffin side. And then sometimes I'm like, why are you putting cheese sauce on a hash brown? Yeah. We don't need that. Yep. So I will say for next year, consult an American and maybe like, you know how, like, I think it's like Coco Chanel. Remove one item before
you leave your house.
Yes. I would apply that.
Except for the dog. And
to the recipe.
The dog. Yeah.
Yeah.
Love, your official consultant for Picard. What are you spiraling about?
So it'll be short because I actually don't have...
I love that we didn't prep each other on this at all. So I have no idea. None of us know what we're saying.
Have you watched Meghan Markle's new show on
Netflix?
Oh,
my God. Okay. So no.
Me either.
But I've listened to multiple culture podcasts on the show. So I have a lot of thoughts.
Okay.
Even have,
so
even
I'm very unqualified to talk about it because I haven't watched it yet. But my spiral is like, why do people hate her so much?
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
So, okay. The things that I know at the show from what I heard people complain about, it's like, it's very boring and it's probably true, but I'm like, she is boring.
Yeah.
What
so
about
like, you
her?
Knew what you were getting.
Yeah. What about her makes you think she was going to do something crazy?
Yeah.
So to me, I'm like, I think we're expecting too much of her. She also is not cool. And I say that as a defense and not an attack. Meaning, we all saw the documentary.
God, can you do that for me?
Yeah.
I say, she is not cool. I do that as a defense, not as an attack.
No, but...
What a great line.
Well, what I mean is, when I saw the documentary that she did with the Harry about, like, leaving the monarchy or whatever, I realized she's like an overeager theater kid.
Yes.
She's not a cool girl.
Yes,
she's not like a mysterious, like, who am I? You'll never know.
But she was like a hyper overachiever, A+ student.
Yeah.
Like, they go back into her childhood. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, when I saw that, I understood who she was. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people, hate her because racism. But I think a lot of people also don't like her, starting disliking her after that, because they were like, wait, you're supposed to be cool, why are you doing this? And so the critiques I hear about her is like, the show is so boring, the food doesn't look good, oh, she put like a bow on this, who cares? And I'm like, but that's, she's serving a purpose. Like, she is doing, like, she's actually being very true to herself, being boring and doing like out of touch things. Like, I have bees in my backyard, let me make honey for you. Like, yes, of course. She used to be part of the monarchy. Like, she's just like not a like a relatable queen, and that's fine. And to me, I'm
but
like,
there's, see, I think that's the hitch. So anyway, having
but
having listened to this podcast, right. So again, when I say anyway, I mean like I haven't paid attention and watched the show at all.
Same.
But what they talk about is this difference between who she is and relatability, and she lacks consistency in her portrayal of herself. And they were saying that like sometimes she'll kind of perform vulnerability but then be closed off but then not know anything but then know everything. And
right.
they were, I thought they had a very interesting critique from a production point of view where they said part of making a good TV show is learning who your character is. And so they've got to pick, like, all these shows, Ina's a character, Martha's a character. They're not actual characters in real life, but to make good TV, you kind of pick a through line. And they're like, this is so erratic. So she just comes across as inconsistent. Like, one moment she's critiquing Mindy Kaling on her title, and the next she's like,
that was,
I don't
awkward.
Know anything about cooking, teach me how to do this. And it just doesn't come across as,
I don't know, consistent. I agree. But I also, like, I don't think she needs to be open and vulnerable, because when she has been, she's been attacked. And I think it's a defense mechanism. And I think that's why she created a show
that's
so like mind numbing. And it's like, you put it on the background and she's not going to like change her life by telling you the pasta recipe that, to be frank,
looks like shit. But then don't you think she needs to take out the whole part of like, cheers to love. Like, if you're going to be Martha. Like, if you're going to be like abstract.
But she doesn't have that edge. Defensive. And that goes back to like, she's never been cool.
So to me, it goes back to you shouldn't have made a TV show.
Unless
you're going to have an amazing producer who helps you curate your...
No matter what she does, she knows she's going to be hated on. My whole stance is like, who cares? There's a million people being...
annoying.
More at mediocre any given than moment, her.
There's so many millions of people being annoying.
And putting out worse content than this.
God, have you turned on Netflix recently? Yeah. Holy hell.
And to me, I'm like, just leave her alone. If she wants to make a shitty, vanilla, like... boring cooking show with like shitty recipes, just let her.
Yeah,
okay, so take it stance.
Take it. Let's maybe both watch it and then report back. We are so over on time, there's no way I'm gonna be able to edit this episode down so much. I'm gonna go quickly.
Okay, go quickly. And
I'll go really quick. My stock is a Kinder egg. I think everyone, I really love them and they bring me so much joy, and I think I really have been working lately on exercising free will at any given moment and realizing that I can buy a Kinder egg whenever I want. So a Kinder egg is basically a milk chocolate, then exterior egg, and then inside is white chocolate, and then inside that is a toy. And my mom used to bring them back from Europe when she would go on work trips as a kid. And today I went to go buy a totally different item for a snack, and I walked in and the Kinder called to me. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, I'm an adult. I can buy a Kinder egg. I don't have to wait for my mom to go on a work trip and get them once a year. Like, what an incredible.
It's so funny. Feeling. It brings me back to my childhood too, because my best friend / my neighbor, her dad is German. And every time he would come back from Germany, he would bring them. So I'm like, I know that feeling. Also, you know, you can find them in the US now, but they're different.
They have more safety protections.
Yes. It's like you have a little spoon. It's not the same. It's like a different kind of chocolate.
It's like half, there's like half an egg and then half is the toy. I was told it's because they have safer.
Kids in
the
US is different.
Yes. Yeah. There's more things that here, like they're afraid.
Exactly. He was like, good luck.
Truly, because they kept them the same here.
Yeah, it's been the
this
same.
This is more, the version here is more joyful because it's actually like the toy is the yolk of the egg, which by the way, I didn't think of until I literally just said that out loud right now.
Also, the chocolate is better.
Okay. Than in the US?
Yeah.
I love the chocolate.
Yeah.
But if you like milk chocolate, I mean, this one is just like great.
It's so good.
Yeah. Okay. I'm spiraling.
Okay. What are you spiraling
about? Guess what I'm spiraling about.
I don't know because you haven't told me.
Okay. I'm spiraling about scaffolding.
Oh my God. Look out my window.
Oh, yes. Oh my God. Okay. So you get it.
Yes. I've been going through this for the past 3 months.
So many thoughts. First of all, sometimes the installation of the scaffolding is taking more time than the construction itself.
Yes.
That is a problem. That's a systemic problem that someone needs to solve. This is not helpful. Second, the construction of the scaffolding is more loud than the construction itself.
Yeah.
Why are you building this out of the loudest fucking material could have imagined? It's my whole week. I just finished 4 years of construction. They built a 5-star hotel next to my apartment.
Oh, fuck.
3 weeks after they finished it, they started scaffolding the building across from me, the entire building. No. All I hear, I work from home, all I hear all day is just like the sound of those fucking metal poles clinking against each other. Can not one single person invent a material for scaffolding that doesn't make the most noise you've ever heard in your entire life?
Yeah.
It's also left up way too long. I think it enables laziness because it enables like, they're like, oh, we'll just leave the scaffolding there and we'll kind of take our time with the construction. I'm like, we need just like better
systems.
Solutions. This is not a solution to construction. And someone, all the little architects out there, I'm sure there's a million architects listening to this podcast. LOL. Can you figure out a solution? Because it's driving me crazy.
Also, is it a seasonal thing? Because I find that scaffolding goes up in the spring a lot.
It's crazy because you know what it drives me nuts about it? It must be.
I think
but
so.
But the moment of the year you most want to open your windows.
Yeah. I mean, I can't.
You can't. The people across from me can't. By the way, I fucking can't because it's like so goddamn loud.
It's so loud, yeah.
It's all I can hear is this stupid construction of the scaffolding and these guys out there with their butt cracks hanging out like on the scaffolding, like taking their damn time smoking out there, looking in my window, making me feel creepy. Guys, this could be the longest ramble of my life. I'm going to wrap it, but I'm driving me crazy.
I will say I hate it, especially in my room and bathroom because I feel like sometimes
I know. You have it every. Yeah, you're right. How long has this been up for?
3 months.
Oh my God.
4 months. They're about to be done, but still. And in the bathroom is the weirdest because I'm like,
yeah, of you're course it's there. Weird. It's a massive privacy issue.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's scaffolding season. Yeah. Well, we'll leave it on that note. Scaffolding season, everyone. Yeah. It's
come finally to Paris here. During scaffolding season.
Thank God. What would we do without it? Well, thanks for joining us on this journey. We're basically at 2 hours, so you'll know how much I was able to edit down by what the final length of the pod
stick
is.
Around.
But holy heck, this is a long one.
It's okay. I think people like, you know.
Have thoughts company. Around personality and existential crisis. Yeah. But yeah, keep DMing us too for episode themes. A lot of people have been recommending episode themes, which I don't know, I really like. I think it's helpful to hear what people want to hear us talk about. Sure. So yeah, thanks for coming and see you next week.
Bye. This was Clashes,
a podcast brought to you by two idiots.
Clearly. I don't know if I can laugh on cue.